hi, everyone. It is good to be back with you this month, as I unfortunately had to miss last month, but here I am, resurrected. This month, you know, our speaker setup, which most of you are somewhat familiar with, is a little bit different, but you who are on the line with us today, I think will enjoy what you're going to hear today, because we have, as Matt indicated, one of our key staff, Jeff Pudlow, who is our legislative director out of our D.C. office. And certainly Jeff is definitely acquainted with our grassroots field, but he spends so much of his time on Capitol Hill and in various meetings with our coalition partners advancing the causes of peace building that I think he can benefit from hearing a little bit more about who you are. But first, he is also the one who keeps track of very important and relevant legislation. He even reads entire bills, by and large, so that I don't have to read entire bills. But he's been very, very good about doing that. And now he's been very helpful in preparing many of the summaries and the materials that we certainly, and I think you in the field as well, can use to make convincing causes to policymakers in the media, because we can provide them with relevant data from their districts or from their states that really makes so much of a difference. You know, Jeff came to us as an intern, really, a couple years ago out of Clarkson University, and he impressed us so much that we actually decided to hire him. And I think it's safe to say at this point in time that that has turned out to be a very wise decision. He's used his Quaker background and their values, coupled with his thirst for and his detailed approach to public policy and peace building to advance the priorities and the needs of society with regard to making this a saner, more peaceful world. And now, Jeff, let me remind you of the kind of people that you will be talking with on this call. You know, these are the folks who've helped us make literally hundreds of contacts with elected officials and the media. They've written letters to the editor and done op-eds. They've made numerous phone calls and personal visits in order to accomplish this. You know, Jeff, some, if not many, actually, of our grassroots have not done much of what we asked them to do before we asked them to do it. You know, it's been a little unusual for many of them, you know, to actually write a letter to their editor or to go visit their congressman or to try to convince a media board or representative of things that they should be aware of. So we feel, though, that with a little help from us, they have become empowered and have taken that first step and the second step and sometimes even the third step. They've learned that it takes not only familiarity with peace-building tools, but commitment and perseverance and patience to achieve their goals. You know, these action team people are made up, Jeff, of folks like Joanne Gaines, for instance, an action team leader from Los Angeles, who in just the past year has set up tables at literally dozens of events around her area, and she's gathered literally hundreds of signatures in support of both the Youth Promise Act and the Department of Peacebuilding legislation. But then she went on to present those signatures to Congress members. And after making contact with her own member of the House of Representatives, and that may be a little bit easier because she can say, gee, I'm your constituent, da-da-da. But she got him to sign on as a co-sponsor of the Youth Promise Act and then didn't stop there. She contacted Congress members in several of the adjoining districts, and then she got them to agree to be co-sponsors. But I think it's important to note that Joanne is not unique among our action team members. You know, we are so very proud of our field volunteers who really do go above and beyond, just as Joanne has done. So, Jeff, now that you've heard just one example, and it is just one example of how these folks are making a difference, I want you to please give them a sense of what's happening on the Hill and with our legislative priorities. And I know that you'll do that well. So you are on, kid.
Thank you for that very flattering introduction. As Bob said, I'm the Legislative Director for the Peace Alliance, and in that role, material development and the research and trying to arm you with state-by-state fact sheets on juvenile justice. I know several of you have used those sheets to help convince members of Congress, and that actually, the genesis of that came from a member of Congress who asked for information specific to her state to help her justify to her constituents supporting such a bill, and that's really where so many members of Congress get their priorities, is that local drive. So we work on stuff like that. We really try and put a lot of effort in those materials to make sure they are accurate and make sure they're convincing and to all sorts of different people. There's a lot of work goes into them, especially in, with Republicans, trying to figure out language that will sell them on what we all know is a wonderful priority and what many of them will know to be a wonderful priority once we talk to them in the right way. I work with a lot of different groups and alliances that we're a part of as Peace Alliance. We work with Open Society Foundations, which is the George Soros run. They convene huge meetings of various advocacy groups to coordinate what we're all doing, to share information about efforts across the field of criminal justice reform. I work on the international side with a working group, the Prevention Protection Working Group, Stop Atrocities, and Better Institute Long-Term Peace Building. And we work with those groups, and in communication with them, we will find new initiatives and things that you as a field should know about, and we should and we also get them interested in our initiatives. Actually, just Thursday, I had a call with somebody who helps run the Jesuit conference in the United States, and he's going to get very heavily involved in the Youth Promise Act, and he's going to try and get an entire interfaith working group that he's part of to get involved as well. So those really can get some wonderful partnerships, and we also have our Youth Promise Act leadership team, which they're kind of 2 years of this. You know, the first year is CJJ, ACLU, but we also have groups like the Prison Fellowship, which is a conservative group founded by Chuck Colson. We have the National Association of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, which is a nonpartisan, very well-respected organization. So we all keep in touch and coordinate our actions and make sure that when we have meetings, we try to have a couple other groups in the room. So it's not just one group saying it. It's ideally several groups from different places on the ideological spectrum. So that's what we try to do. So I've been asked also to give a quick refresher on the Youth Promise Act. So the Youth and where it stands on the Hill. So the Youth Promise Act is juvenile violence prevention through evidence-based support. So you're creating early childhood education, you're creating mentoring programs, social-emotional learning, restorative justice, that is now included in the bill. The bill itself has a list of suggested components of basically these are evidence-based practices that have shown to work, and this is where we think you should be looking as a community when you're trying to implement these. Restorative justice is now added to that list. It's an important bill because it really tries to get ahead of the curve. So many of these other criminal justice reform issues are after things have happened, after somebody has been arrested, after they go into the prison system or the judicial system. And you've got sentencing reform, make sentencing shorter. You've got reentry supports, the Second Chance Act, that make it easier for people to reintegrate into society. And all those are important, but it's cheaper and it's more effective And it really has a much more profound and more positive effect on people's lives if you can come in at the very beginning and make sure that they get a good education and they have opportunities. And that's what the Youth Promise Act can do and that so many of these other bills can't. And so, update on the bill. So, focusing primarily on the Senate.
Jeff, quick pause. Are you on speaker?
I am.
Can you put it just on a regular, it's coming through a little muffled.
All right, we'll try. The reception is not the best, and I have to like keep the phone in one position.
Okay. Do what you need to do. Maybe pull the phone a little bit away from your mouth. Okay.
All right, so is this any better?
I think so.
Okay. So, bill update. And this year, we are doing foursomes instead of just traditionally bills are introduced with a lead and a co-lead, a Republican and Democrat. In the House this year, we have Bobby. In the House here, they decided to do four, two Democrats, two Republicans. So Bobby Scott, of course, is leading the bill. It's his bill as a Democrat, and the other Democrat is Tony Curtis. And on the Republican side, we have Walter Jones, who from North Carolina. Who led the bill last year, and I heard the Hendersonville folks on earlier, who led the bill last year, and also Trey Gowdy from South Carolina, who's new to the bill and very credible on the conservative side. He is the chair of the Select Committee on Benghazi. So he brings a lot of credibility with people we need to win over. And on the Senate side, we have this year leading the bill will be Jim Inhofe, who also is a very credible conservative and very powerful voice on that side of the aisle. And with him, we will have Senator Bob Casey from Pennsylvania, as well as Senator Peters from Michigan, the only Democratic freshman at the right now, unfortunately. I'd say that. we're not part of an organization. Anyway, where you come in, or where your efforts come in, is we are looking for a second Republican lead. We're hoping to have somebody strong who can lead the bill, especially on the Judiciary Committee. But we'll take anybody, and so we need you to push your senators to support the bill, whether they be Republicans or Democrats. And try and get them to help us get this introduced, and well supported when it is. Anyway, it's a little away from what I'm just talking about. So, some changes in the bill this year. This year, both House and Senate is fully funded. So you can tell your representatives and senators that it's not new money; that it's making better use of existing money, and that is a big selling point for many of them. I can go into the funding mechanism more in depth later if you want, but it's basically draws from mentoring funding, which comes from a variety of sources that the appropriation committee has kind of put in one pot. So that's one big change. The other change that we're very proud of is that restorative justice is now included in the bill. Last year and early this year, we spent a lot of time working with the bill's lead sponsors, Bobby Scott, Jim Inhofe's office, to make sure that was included, because restorative justice is emerging as an incredibly important tool. It is evidence-based, and we want to make sure that the Youth Promise Act incorporates it, because the Youth Promise Act is a great new model for a grant program, and it should have some of the greatest new initiatives that we can think of in it. Restorative justice, we really have become huge believers in it and showing its worth more and more. So we're very happy that we were able to get that in the bill. I should also mention right now there's a lot of bipartisan momentum on all these things, and it's really you can find a lot of unlikely allies, what we might think of as unlikely allies. So don't be afraid to talk to Republicans. There are a lot of Republicans, including very conservative ones, working on the Second Chance Act, which is reentry work. There are a lot of them working on a lot of different good bills, and they're not all in it for money. The other thing is that there are some who really are in it for the moral side, and you know, the redemption weighs heavily with many of them. So, I mean, there's really been quite a few people that are working this issue I never thought would be working on this issue. The Koch brothers are putting a lot of money and effort behind sentencing reform and reentry. So there's a lot going on in D.C., and this is one of the few areas, to be honest, where there really is bipartisan work. But it is happening, and we should be encouraged, and we need to go out there and get them. And it does make a difference when you go in to meet with your member of Congress in their offices. They really take notice, especially when you're willing to go in to take a meeting or really follow up in depth with staff members, because they are impressed that people care enough to really engage. It is intimidating to a lot of people, and they know that. They understand that. And when you come in clearly caring about an issue and knowing about an issue, it affects them. And even in the local offices, they will let the D.C. offices know. And it changes minds. And persistence can pay off as well, as the Gainesville team knows with Ted Yoho. So anyway, I think about a little over my 10 minutes, so I will open it up for questions.
Great. So what folks can do is, if you want to ask a question of Jeff about any of the things he's been talking about or anything we're working on in D.C. that you might know about, raise your hand. You can push the one key on your touchpad. That will raise your hand in our system, and we'll call on you. So I'll start with Kim, I just say where you're from also. Please say your name and where you're from.
Hey, everyone. This is Kim Schwarzkopf in Seattle, Washington. I'm here with my co-leader, Susie Tennant. And Jeff, thank you so much for joining us and giving us more information. So nice. I've definitely I've been asking Dan through the years now. For more information, he mentions your name. Well, let me talk to Jeff. Let me see what Jeff has to say. Let me get Jeff on that. He'll have something. So I've been asking. So thank you so much for being there for our team and everyone. And you mentioned something about the funding, and I'm particularly interested in that. Before it was, if I understand right, funded through the Edward Byrne Memorial Justice Grant, and then within that, the criminal innovation, I believe. And you're saying that now you're saying it's drawing from mentoring funding? Is that what you said?
Yeah, so that was last year's bill. That is not the case anymore. That was one funding mechanism. There were some questions around it. I can go into some of the details, but it's fairly arcane, some of it. This year there is a fund that is appropriated every year in the Commerce, Justice, and Science Appropriation Bill called the Youth Mentoring Fund, which is all for youth mentoring programs. It's from a variety of different authorizations, as I understand it. I've actually had some trouble tracking it down, where that money is actually authorized. The Youth Promise Act and the current model would take 20% of that funding, which, I mean, Youth Promise Act is very similar. It's very similar types of programs, but it's more than just mentoring. And we can provide a better wraparound system of programs than just that fund as it currently exists. It's a simpler one than last year.
Okay, and last year meaning the one, meaning the Edward Burns?
Yep, that's gone now. So
that's gone now. And so now you said it's appropriated from the, and I missed it, and then you said youth mentoring. But what's the, is appropriated from the what?
Commerce, Justice, and Science appropriation. So basically it's an account. It's one account. It's not its own standalone program. It's just it's an account that goes to a grant fund for that administered by DOJ at the moment. The Burn thing was its own kind of separate program. This is just a pot of money.
Okay.
Hi, this is Bob Bass. Just to clarify it a little bit for you, the problem with the funding for that was in the bill from the last session, the burn money, is number one, it wasn't a very large amount of money, so that made it a little less attractive to some of the more liberal people, and it wasn't in the Senate and in the House. The way legislation works is you get a committee to authorize the program. They have to approve the program, and then the program, once approved by the relevant committee, goes to the appropriators to actually fund it, if that's going to happen. The problem with the Burn money, it was never actually authorized, and that gave some of the more conservative members concern. So this year, Representative Scott has worked out a new funding formula with a fund that A, is potentially larger, and B, although there are still a few questions, is in all likelihood justifiable as having been authorized. So that's why the funding changed. So it's going to be more attractive to the more liberal people because it's a larger fund, and it's going to be more attractive to the conservatives because it's, for all intents and purposes, authorized. So we think that this is a step in the right direction.
Should also mention that Congressman Scott just introduced his version of the JJDPA, which also includes the version of the Youth Promise Act, the Juvenile Justice and Delinquency Prevention Act, which needs to be reauthorized. It's been around since the 70s as the primary piece of federal juvenile justice legislation. But anyway, he introduced his version of it, including the Youth Promise Act, and under that version, the money would come out of the JJDPA fund, which we'll get you more details on that if we wind up engaging on that a whole lot more.
Great. Okay, awesome. And then just to confirm again, you said commerce, justice, and what?
Commerce, justice, and science.
And science.
Science, the CJS appropriations bill, which I believe the House just passed their version of it last week, I think. They have $95 million in that account, in the youth mentoring account. So it's substantially more money. And the Youth Promise Act takes 20% of that. So it's substantially more money than last year's funding.
Wow. Yes, because I think it was only $10 million. So awesome. Thank you so much.
Good. Well, thanks, Kim. We've got a lot of hands up, so I want to, in the time, little bit of time we have left, I want to get to other folks. Let's try Cheryl.
Hi, everybody. This is Cheryl from Gainesville. I just wanted to say to you, thank you so much for giving me the feedback that I needed. Just recently, I wrote something to one of our senators, and I was pretty aggravated, and Jeff gave me some feedback about that and also helped me interpret the response that I got, which was all about the voting and voting patterns, and so I was pretty confused about that. I just want to tell everybody that Jeff is available for you to talk with if you need help with understanding what's going on Capitol Hill. And we've spoken many times because I didn't really understand all the ins and outs of the bipartisanship or people not voting this way or voting that way. So Jeff is very helpful when you need some help getting something interpreted. So thank you, Jeff, for helping me learn how to, you know, advocate for what I want.
All right. Yeah, and please, you can certainly use me as a resource. I tend to work over email, so email me at jeff@peacealliance.org, and I'll try to get back to you if you've got any questions that you want answered.
Great. Okay, we might have time for one or possibly two more, but let's go with Gia. Hi, Gia.
Hi. Hi, everyone. First of all, I'd like to thank Jeff. If it wasn't for your support, you know, last year during the DC Hill on the Hill meetings, I probably would have been very lost, or I would have gone blank and not know what exactly to say. So I want to thank you for that, for being there on the last meetings that I had on the 23rd. I also wanted to ask if there's any way to check with schools that know they need the mentoring support, because you mentioned that the new bill that is funding, or that could fund, Youth Promise Act is focused on mentoring for youth. So I know already of a few schools that are saying there's not enough support, there's not enough of that extra help for counseling, mentoring. It's often not existent in a lot of elementary schools. Most middle schools and high schools do have that counseling, mentoring part, but a lot of elementary schools don't have that, so they have to seek support from outside schools, and then they have to pay for those services, and a lot of the times they don't have the funding to do that. So I'm wondering, is there any way to keep track of those schools, possibly collaborate, let's say, with principals or with teachers to figure out a number, like a number that you could give in a meeting, a statistic, let's say, for the state of California, like these many schools don't have the mentoring services they need, or these many schools don't have or lack this service. And then you could, you know, use that to support Youth Promise Act.
Or that would be, you do that? That would be a hard number to put together, unfortunately. Just anything to do with trying to get comprehensive statistics on schools is incredibly difficult to do, since there are so many jurisdictions and overlapping programs. I mean, exploring programs, whether they exist at a state level, federal level, local level, that's very hard. Those are very hard numbers to put together, unfortunately. I don't know if I have the capability to do it. I mean, I know also that most school mentoring programs are funded through the Department of Education. The Youth Promise Act and the mentoring programs are community mentoring programs funded through the Department of Justice. So,
okay.
I mean, it's a little disconnected from the school stuff. I mean, there is a real need, and I mean, part of the Youth Promise Act that is trying to address that need by using federal money to pull in local resources as well. So, I mean, there is a component of the Youth Promise Act. It's the federal money is only supposed to be like 30% of the total, but it's a big chunk that can really help mobilize the community to bring a lot of their own resources to bear on a problem, especially once they've gotten everyone in the room, all the stakeholders together, and figured out exactly how to solve the problem and just how big the scope of the problem is. So we're really trying to find ways to put less money to more work to try and help youth.
That makes sense. And I'm wondering if by any chance Senator Barbara is a part of this new, the mentoring bill that you mentioned, because not just the Youth Promise Act, I know she's part of the Youth Promise Act, but the mentoring portion of it, for some reason, I saw something on her page maybe a month, 2 months ago, where she was proposing a new bill, but I clicked for more information, and her website doesn't have that yet, so I'm not sure when they'll have it up there. But it has to do with mentoring for youth, so she knows there's a lack of mentoring services in California and throughout the United States. So I was wondering if maybe that's where Youth Promise Act could be would make sense for Republicans. Like, this is what's going to cover this need.
I'm not familiar with the bill at all, so I can't really comment.
Okay. All right.
Sorry.
Well,
yeah, but we need to work on Senator Boxer, Gia, and get, she's actually not on board yet, so we need to get her on board. I mean, she hasn't been on the Senate bills yet, so we have our work cut out
and
to get her on. But
I
know, of course, mentoring is such.
Senator Boxer
has said. We can use the angle of. Go ahead, Jeff.
Senator Boxer has said she's supportive and would sign on to a bill if asked by the leads. I mean, she understands that the Senate, there have been a lot of strategic concerns about who we want to sign on to the bill and who we don't want to sign on to the bill. Just really trying to manage the perception of too many Democrats and no Republicans, a kind of. And so she has said that she would sign on if the lead Democrat asked her to. So she is supportive.
Great. Good.
Thank you.
Okay, we're a little behind schedule, so we need to wrap up. Unfortunately, I'm happy to stay on afterwards. I don't know if others can as well from staff to answer the questions from the folks who didn't get a chance. I apologize, but we have to pivot here. Thank you, Jeff, for all your hard work and for keeping our strong foot in the D.C. pool of all that's happening and really bringing expertise and depth to all the work that we're all doing. It's a great relationship we all have together. Our staff loves our grassroots, and hopefully you guys feel the same way about us, and it's just great to have you there really engaging and diving in on so many levels to all these conversations and keeping us informed and feeding it back. So appreciate all you're doing.
All right, and thanks for having me. Thanks for listening to the app.
So, it's informative. And we'll, you know, Jeff will keep on Youth Promise Act and all of our issues. He'll keep pulsing out good information. So as things develop with Youth Promise Act, we'll continue to get more out to everybody in terms of what we're learning. Cool. So we're going to pivot now into a few announcements. Let me get to them here. Just a reminder, too, we're going to be at the end of the call looking at our June action sheet together, which is going to be focused on the Youth Promise Act and writing and calling our senators. That'll be in about probably 15 minutes. So if you can, if you haven't yet, go to the website, thepeacealliance.org or peacealliance.org, and download that. There's on the home page on the right-hand column, it says monthly action page. It's a little red ribbon. Or monthly action is what it says. And then on there you'll see the link to the action sheet. And so hopefully you guys can have already printed that out. If you can't, just at least pull it up on your computer and we'll go over it here very shortly. A couple of other areas, Be the Movement. You know, of course, we launched that about a month and a half ago, a little less than that, with the five cornerstones of peace building being a real framing for our work and what we're doing and why we're doing it. And you know, it's been great. We've had a lot of exciting response. It's certainly sparked a lot of interest. We've had lots of new folks come into our website. Thousands of people have been reading the information and joining our email lists and starting to get excited about getting involved. So it's been really fun. It's been a great opportunity to kind of put our vision out there in a more clear and concise and inspiring way. We've been just thrilled with the response so far. And the cornerstones themselves have been getting a lot of attention. Interestingly, the Teaching Peace in Schools cornerstone has been one of our most popular ones in terms of what people have read. Folks are really diving into that, and we've been, you know, anchoring these cornerstones into action alerts around various bills that we're working on. Of course, all of you guys in our action teams have been really diving in deeply on just a few bills that we've been working on for several years, and those are really important to do that. But we also wanted to have the chance to have quick actions on a lot of bills related to it, like the social and emotional learning bill that Congressman Tim Ryan has introduced as one example around teaching peace in schools. So we'll continue to work on that and look for key legislation that fits these cornerstones and really allows us to make a difference on a wider range of issues in some way or another with these cornerstones. And we'll learn a lot as we do it, I believe. I think all of us will strengthen our capacity to really speak to these issues. One quick thing on we're doing kind of a bonus action for the entire summer this year. And that's, as Bob shared earlier with Joanne, the real power of tabling. And so we're really going to encourage everybody to get out this summer when there's all kinds of festivals and events and farmers markets, and there's so many opportunities to table and, you know, sign up for a Peace Alliance table at an event, or at least show up and walk around if you can't. And in particular, one of the things we'd love for folks to do is we're going to have that Peace Building Cornerstone petition, which was online, which we've already had a lot of folks signing and gotten a lot of interest in it. We're going to do a physical version of that as well as electronic, which you could do on your iPhones and Android, you know, phones, whatever you have, and go around and try to help get folks to sign on to the petition to be a part of the movement and be in support of these five cornerstones being a core part of our sort of policy and legislative foundation in our nation. So, and of course, the Promise Act and Department of Peace and other things that folks are interested in, you can bring and get folks to get in touch with their members of Congress. But it's a real opportunity to both build up a national support network through the Peace Alliance by getting them to sign the petition, and then we have them in our database, but also your local efforts, your local action teams. They might be willing to join up or get inspired when you do that. So there's lots. We'll have some tips and some materials you can print, and even some hopefully some banner designs you could have done for a nice Peace Alliance banner that you could put on your table. So keep your eyes and ears posted for that. We'll be sharing more on the weekly action team leader calls coming up, and we'll post it on the website as well for those of you who are not in action teams but want to get out and spread the word. Let's see, the National Conference, we're so excited about that. It's been several years since we've had one of our conferences. This year it's going to be on October 16th through the 20th, and we'd be really thrilled and excited to have all of you come out and join us and get involved. It's an incredibly inspiring experience to be together in D.C. That part is fantastic, just for all of us to come together and get to really have some space and time to get to know each other better and see each other's faces. And it's so inspiring to all be on the Hill together for, you know, a day or two, meeting with members of Congress and you know, really educating them on these issues. And in the past, it's made a real difference on the legislation in terms of getting co-sponsors and creating awareness and buzz and momentum. They know when these groups come into town because they start chatting with each other. So it's a great experience. We really hope you guys can come out. We're going to continue to offer tips and tools for how you can get there. For some of you, may not be an issue to get there. For others, it might be an issue. It might be an issue of finances, et cetera. And we have some good ideas to help folks get there and raising your own money in your own community. And we'll keep posting that, and we'll talk about it on the weekly action team calls as well. So we hope everybody will join us. Please sign up, and it's going to be a great time, really great time. So I'm going to turn it over now, the rest of the call, to Lori Draper, our assistant National Assistant Field Director. She's going to lead the rest of the call and take it over, Lori. Let me open you up. There you go.
Thanks, Matt.
You're on.
And I just have to totally agree with Matt about the conference. That was where I first got engaged with the Peace Alliance in 2007, and it's incredibly inspiring to be there with everyone, to meet each other in person, and then the power of going to the Hill together, you just can't imagine. So I hope everyone will make the effort to be there. So right now I'm going to talk about our stats from last month and the year. Year to date, we've had 5 letters to the editor published, which includes one this month from Cheryl. And we've had 5 op-eds, and all of them have been this month. So it's been a particularly great month for op-eds. And we've had 1 editorial, 1 radio interview, 3 sit-down meetings with members of Congress or staff, 3 tabling events, and I think I don't have everything included from the California team, so I'll be updating that next month. And then 18 coalition building meetings, 2 of those were this month from SETA's team in Chicago area. We've had 4 presentations and 2 tabling events. So remember, if you have met with a member of Congress or their staff or have any media that was published, please let us know. There's an online tool for doing that. It's on the tab titled Tools in Education. The second one down is organizing an action quick reference. At the bottom of that page is a place to report in on your meetings and tabling events and published articles. And then the last of the announcements is that if you are interested in joining an action team or hosting an starting an action team in your area, we're going to be hosting a call the first Thursday of every month. So the next one is July 2nd. If you go to the red banner on the right under action teams, you can register for that call. I just noticed today, Matt, that it still has last month's information, so we'll have to get that updated in the next couple of days. All right, so here we're going to move on to grassroots victories. We've got a couple this month, and starting off, I'm going to introduce Cindy Gavin. She's from our team in Aurora, Illinois. Cindy, are you out there?
Yeah, hi, Lori.
Hi. Oh, all right. Nice to have you here.
Would you like for me to start?
Yes, please go ahead.
Okay. This past Tuesday, our Aurora, Illinois Peace Alliance Action Team completed 4 weeks of high-impact training with Dan and Lori. We're a team of 9 members, and 5 or 6 of us attended each session, and we've greatly benefited from team-building exercise, inspirational readings, learning a variety of political lobbying tactics to gain co-sponsorship for the Youth Promise Act, and savvy guidance in how the average citizen can influence lawmaking and public policy for peace. Dan and Lori introduced our team to relationship building tools, for example, the Champion Scale and communication templates, for example, EPIC, E-P-I-C, that encouraged and empowered us to do a number of things, to research our members of Congress and identify values and possible areas of commonality or compassion, to write op-eds and letters to the editor asking our members of Congress to support the YPA, to make productive calls to and invite face-to-face conversation with senators and representatives on the Youth Promise Act, and to open our hearts and minds to the Michelle Bachmans in our midst, becoming truly nonpartisan advocates of a bill that offers a win-win solution of restorative justice for youth rather than retributive justice. Great deal of value in the training came from weekly accountability checkpoints, the consistency of the meetings, on keeping an open forum for questioning, challenging, and clarifying. One outcome of the training is a plan to invite U.S. Representative Bill Foster to attend a community family dinner at the church as a special guest. These intergenerational dinners are held monthly at the church. 35 to 60 people attend. Our community meals stem from a Harvard initiative called the Family Dinner Project, which is a growing movement that champions family dinner as an opportunity for family members to connect with each other through food, fun, and conversation about things that matter. We think that the Youth Promise Act and juvenile justice matters, and that it can make for good conversation at a community meal in which our congressmen can hear the stories of constituents whose desire for peace initiatives and juvenile justice grow out of their hopes that their children will not suffer what they themselves did as former gang members. This is a timely and especially relevant in our area where youth are increasingly involved in shootings and gang activity. For example, last weekend there were 8 shootings. 3 suspects were arrested, ages 14, 19, and 20, and I see in this morning's paper that there were shootings last night involving 3 children in the car, 16 months, 18 months, and 4 years old. This idea and planned action that we came up with was born out of that training that we had with Dan and Lori, and I believe we would not have formed it had it not been for these weekly meetings with them. So I want to thank you very much, Dan and Lori, for being our leaders, mentors, mirrors, and helpers in forming ourselves as a team.
Thank you so much, Cindy, and thank you for your very touching stories. Dan and I know I speak for both of us, thoroughly enjoyed and were enriched by our training modules with your team. Thank you so much, Cindy. So next up we have Cheryl Kaplan, our hero from Gainesville, Florida. Cheryl, are you on and ready?
Yep, I'm ready.
All right, go ahead.
Hi, everybody, again. Recently, the Florida legislature passed a law that allows law enforcement to give out civil citations or warnings or even bring kids home to their parents and let the parents deal with the situation. Kids who would have otherwise been arrested for misdemeanors, they can be referred to intervention and diversion programs that would help them deal with their issues and their behavior. I've been involved in helping educate our community about the issues of juvenile justice in the past year and advocate with our legislators, read that Ted Yoho, Tea Party Republican, about the Youth Promise Act. In the past 2 weeks, a letter to the editor I wrote was published about the passage of the civil citation law, and Ted Yoho became an early co-sponsor of the Youth Promise Act. And we now have a presentation scheduled at a church that one of our members is involved in. When I read the article in the Gainesville Sun about the civil citation law and heard about it on NPR, I got very excited and sat down right away and wrote a letter to the editor. Then I called him and told him I wrote a letter and would he publish it. He told me that we've been doing this all along in Alachua County, so what was different? Well, what was different is that our law enforcement now have the discretion by law when they see someone doing something stupid. They don't have to arrest kids for misdemeanors. I also spoke with the assistant deputy of our local Department of Juvenile Justice and was very surprised to learn that she didn't know that it had been passed. If she didn't know, then at least the public needs to be informed. The bottom line is let your passion be your guide. I've always been an advocate for children, but never loud about it. I've learned to be loud and polite. You can't get something done if you think you're not important enough for people to listen to you. And that's who I was a year and a half ago. I didn't think I could accomplish anything near what my fellow volunteers did, and I was pretty intimidated. But I have, and now I can call my congressman's office in D.C., and they know who I am. There's one more thing I wanted to share. I used to think that coaching calls were silly. No longer. The coaching calls gave me courage to practice and actually speak out. The monthly actions gave me guidance as to what was needed. And when I'm asked if I did the action, I hate to say no.
Oh, Cheryl, you are such an inspiration. You continue to be. And it's just so powerful to see that your activism is not only used in getting legislation passed, but now you're also involved in implementation. So inspiring. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you.
So right now we are going to move into our Totally Ready for Primetime Players role play with our activists from across the country, starring Peggy Hanna from Springfield, Ohio, Kim Schwartzkopf from Seattle, Washington, and Jennifer Carr from Seward, Alaska on my team. And we're going to do a little role play on a congressional meeting. We found that some people have found it to be really nerve-wracking to even think about going into their legislative offices and have a meeting. So we're going to do a brief role play. And I recognize that we are a little bit behind time, so we'll try to make it go quickly. And if everyone's ready on the call, Peggy, Kim, Jennifer, and I are here together in Seward, Alaska. So Peggy, when you are ready, you can start by saying knock, knock.
Knock, knock.
Hello, I'm Jason Knox. I'm the Assistant State Director for Senator Rob Portman. And welcome to my office. Come in and sit down, please.
Oh, thank you so much. It's really great of you to take the time to let us come and talk to you about the Youth Promise Act. As you know, we're members of the Clark County Peace Alliance, and I'd just like to take a minute to introduce ourselves. I live in Springfield. I'm originally from Chicago, married 53 years, 9 children, 16 grandchildren, and I work half-time in the sociology department at Wittenberg. So that's pretty much who I am. I have a story to tell. I'll get back to that later. I'd just like to introduce Kim and Jennifer, and they can tell you a little bit about themselves. Kim?
Hi, my name's Kim Schwarzkopf. I live in town, Seattle, Washington, and I was born in New York, went to school at UVM, studied sociology and political science, moved out west. And I've got 2 boys, 11 and 14 years old. I'm a filmmaker, entrepreneur, and now I've started a mentoring program. Nice to meet you. And Jennifer?
Yeah, my name's Jennifer Carr. I'm a mother of 3. I have a special needs son, which has introduced me to the world of special needs and people who are least powerful in our society. I'm also a recent grandmother, which has made me want to look forward to a world more peaceful. I'm a retired teacher, and I've seen how the poor and the least in our society need extra help in school, and that's a perfect time to teach peaceful ways in our school, and how the programs of the Peace Alliance, or the Promise Act, can help with mentoring and after-school programs. So I'm here to promote that.
Well, I thank both of you. I think we're in good shape here in terms of how motivated we are. Jason, I was curious about you, though. You've heard a little bit about ourselves. Can you tell us something about yourself and how you happened to get into politics or at least into this position?
Wow, thanks for asking, Peggy. Well, I got to tell you, I grew up in Clark County, too. And my household was really political, and there was politics around the dinner table. We read the newspaper every day, and so I got the bug early. And in college, I joined the Young Republicans, and it was just a natural fit for me to find work in this field.
Well, that is great. We're a bit different that way. I didn't grow up that way, but it was the Vietnam War that got me interested in politics and having a voice. So now I'm not sure how much time we have to share our stories, but we really would like to let you know why we're so passionate about the Youth Promise Act. Is there enough time to go into it, or we give you the abbreviated version?
Oh, sure. And tell me about this bill that you're interested in.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I should have done that first. Kim, you're the one that seems to have the best handle on how to express this. So would you tell him about the Youth Promise Act, and then if we have time, we'll try to do our stories.
Okay, sounds good. I'll try. I mean, I just learned about this legislation in about a year and a half ago. But it was first introduced in 2007. I want to tell you that the Youth Promise Act, PROMISE stands for Prison Reduction Through Opportunities, Mentoring, Intervention, Support, and Education. Currently, we've got a bill number for the House. It's 2197. The Senate bill will be coming along shortly. I'm going to read the summary because I get really nervous about speaking, but it's bipartisan legislation that uses community decision-making and proven programs to save money and prevent youth violence. So in our most troubled areas, this bill would reduce crime and strengthen communities. The Act will fund, implement, and evaluate an array of evidence-based, locally controlled youth and gang violence prevention and intervention practices. Programs will include proven violence prevention practices, such as mentoring and after-school programs that have been shown to reduce crime more effectively and at a lower cost than incarceration. The Act will also encourage communities to reinvest a portion of their savings back into PROMISE programs. So that's a little bit a summary about
it. Yeah, that sounds like a really interesting bill, and I really want to thank you guys for taking the time out of your day and making an appointment and coming to visit with me here in the office, and I'm really going to share what you've told me with the senator. Do you have any specific requests of the senator?
Well, we're hoping that once he looks into the specifics of it, that he will become an initial co-sponsor with everyone else on the bill. And if he has questions, maybe he could talk with Senator Inhofe, who's the lead co-sponsor.
Well, that's really good information to have, Jennifer. Thank you so much.
Do you have any other questions for us?
I don't think so, but if I'll get your contact information, if something comes up, I'll be sure to contact you.
Okay, and I'd like to say, since time is so short, we'd like to come and call on you again, and maybe we can talk a little more personally about why we are so passionate about this bill. We'd come back in a few weeks if that'd be okay.
Well, let me check my calendar.
And if we could have an email back from you to know how things are going, we'd really appreciate it.
Sure.
Maybe check back with me in a couple.
Yes.
Okay.
We'll definitely check that.
Thanks so much. I know you didn't have much time this time, but we'll come back and you'll get to know us and our stories. And I really would like to ask one more thing. If you would be sure to thank Senator Portman for sponsoring that Second Chance Act. I have personal reason, connection with that. And that's probably one of the reasons I feel the strongest about why he would want to support this act. So we can talk further in our next meeting. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, all of you. Very great job. Oh, my gosh. It did take a little longer than I thought. I was totally warned that was going to take a little longer. But generally speaking, when you have a meeting with members of Congress, they're incredibly polite. They're so happy that you came, just like Jeff said, and it does make a big difference. So we're going to try to take a little of the mystery out of it. Peggy said it was much more nerve-wracking to do it here on the call than it is to actually go to the office. And Nancy Merritt reminded us that we need to remember that they're people too. All right. Well, thanks, everyone. So we're going to move on to the next section of the agenda now. And that is the action. We are going to look at the action sheet that we pulled out earlier, and wondering if there is someone from the field that's willing to sum up in a couple of sentences what our action is this month.
Press 1 on your phone if you're willing, 1 on your keypad.
Oh, yeah, and if you could help me out with that, Matt, I don't have my access to my computer right now.
Kim is willing.
Yeah, it's actually Susie here. Hi. This month's action, the June 2015 action, is to write a letter or email to your two senators and also call their D.C. offices, urging them both to contact. Pardon me?
I didn't go.
Urging them to contact Senator James Inhofe and become initial co-sponsors of the Youth Promise Act.
All right, great. We can. Thank you very much. So simple action, very, very important. And I always feel like if all our teams across the country take this action in a really short time frame, it has a really big impact. I'm picturing teams from all across the country contacting members of the Senate at the same time and getting a buzz going. So this month, both letters and phone calls, they can be really brief, and you can do it today. You can do it right after the call. So first thing to do, find out if your senator was a co-sponsor during the last session, and that's available on the website. On the action sheet, you can see how to find that. And most senators have a contact form on their website that allows you to submit a typed letter. And then the next most critical thing is following up. Call to emphasize the importance of your message to seek to learn your members' thoughts and feelings about the bill. So when you're writing your letters, this is where you can tell your personal story. And I think it's the stories that stick with them about the bill. So I'm urging you, as soon as this call is over, to sit down together, write these letters to both senators, and then do a follow-up call to make sure they were received and to get their reaction. Are there any questions about the action this month?
Press the one key.
Press one. I'm sorry. Press one if you've got a question. Sorry, I keep forgetting to say that.
Okay, Kim.
Yeah. Can you remind us what Senator Inhofe's direct number is? I know you gave it to us. It would be nice.
You know, I don't have it right here, Kim. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't know if anyone
actually
else
no,
all has.
I'll just share that they all have easy access to get in touch with each other, so it's okay if you don't include that. They know how to reach each other. It's just more the point of letting them know.
Keep talking, and I'll look it up.
We have Cheryl has a question.
Well, it's more of a comment. When you write a letter, when you mail a letter to Congress, it takes a while because of security to get through. So what I've been doing is writing a letter and attaching it to an email that I send to a staff person in the senator's office or the congressman's office. And that way it gets to that person pretty fast. Otherwise, it might take a few weeks to get through. So that's what my suggestion is. Or you can fax it or send a postcard, because those get through faster.
Yeah, thanks, Cheryl. And then I've also heard that if you send your letter to your local office and they forward it on, that it doesn't take quite as long to go through the screening process it has to go through in D.C.
Yes. Also, Nancy?
I have a question. After you've gone through all this, contacting your congressperson or senator, meeting, letters, et cetera, and they have signed on or said they signed on, as my congressperson has, and is not appearing on the list, what should I do next? Is there something, how do we ensure that final step is taken? Should I contact the LEDS director at Bobby Scott's office, or what's next?
The main person who's working on the bill is really on the Education and the Workforce Committee over in the House. His name is Christian Haynes. But if you have problems, you should call into either Jeff or to me, and we can get the information to, you know, if you're having a problem, we can get the information to the Hill staffer rather than having you take the time to reach out to them, and they won't know necessarily who you are, even though you'll identify yourself with the peace lines. But we can probably get through a little bit more quickly because they are so busy, it is hard even for us at times. So just feel free to let us know if there's a problem.
My congressperson, Mark Desaigne, agreed quite some time ago to sign on and said he would contact, he's on this committee with Bobby Scott himself, and so that's where we're at, and I don't see his name on there. I don't know if that's a strategic thing or what, that they're not putting people on the bill yet, or I don't know.
I think it is strategic, isn't it, Bob? Aren't they kind of holding a little bit off on Democrats until they get more Republicans?
Right, they're not really being aggressive on the Democrats whom they know they or feel strongly that they can get. So we want to build up a little cadre of Republicans. I think in the House, you know, which has been controlled by the Republicans for a while now, that we have a better shot at it because we're working with two people. Walter Jones is a very nice guy, sometimes very conservative, but a decent person. But he's not an overly aggressive or mover within the Republican conference. I think a guy by the name of Jeff mentioned, Gowdy, even though he's trying to pin something on Senator on with Benghazi is nevertheless going to be a lot more effective within his ranks, and he's more vocal within the ranks. So, you know, we think we can get to some of those people. We're working hard with a lot of the staff, particularly the staff from Inhofe, who's the real lead, and she is much more aware of the bill than she was last session, and much more committed to it, I think, and willing to take a much stronger leadership role. Let me give you Inhofe's number for those who did ask, but main office number is 202-224-4721. That's 202-224-4721.
Great. All right. Thanks, Bob.
There's no more questions. I just want to add one little quick thing that even if Congressman Scott's office is kind of holding on adding Democrats, they're certainly keeping track of it. It's still incredibly valuable for folks to meet and reach out, because they're definitely keeping track, and when the moment's right, they'll be getting them signed up. So.
Right, and if you do happen to meet with a Democratic congressman and that office indicates that they want to sign on to the bill, don't discourage them. I mean, let them do it. I you know, as Matt just said, Scott's office has a strategy, but never look a gift horse in the mouth, as they like to say. So if somebody steps up and said, gee, I really want to sign on, by all means.
All right. Thank you, Bob. So we're a little bit over time here, so I just wanted to extend the invitation to stay on after the call for anyone who wants to chat a little bit longer or if they're interested in starting an action team. And with that, I'll do a closing quote. And this one comes from Brené Brown, who we've used many times. Yes, vulnerability feels dangerous, and yes, it feels scary and maybe even terrifying. But is it more scary and does it feel more dangerous to get to the end of our lives and wonder, looking back, what would have happened had I shown up? What would have happened had I been all in? And with that, Matt, maybe you could open up the lines for everyone to say goodbye.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye. Thank you all.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.
Hi, Lori. This is Cindy.
Hey, Cindy.
Hello. Hi. I'm sorry, but my call dropped and I just got back in. Could you tell me again who the quote is by?
Oh, Brené Brown, B-R-E-N-E, last name Brown.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.